Hello and welcome to the Game Theory Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Vecini. We are presented by The Athletic. Today on the show, Danny LaRue is back in the building, and we are going to run through and break down the glorious, beautiful Southeast Division in the NBA as part of our offseason review for the 2021 offseason. Danny LaRue, how you doing, man?
Doing well. I'm enjoying a little bit of, let's call it our version of peace and quiet, now that Summer League is over, now that the transactions have slowed to something even more faint than a trickle. And I don't love too long a time of this, but I like some time of this.
Yeah, and you know, like I said on the last podcast that we recorded together, part of the reason that I'm banking a lot of these and recording them is because I'm going on a two-week vacation. And by the way, that two-week vacation, because I live in Melbourne right now, will be on my couch, because unfortunately I cannot leave the house all that often because we are locked down. It is a very disappointing way to live, but nonetheless, I understand why it's happening. Danny enjoyed his time in Las Vegas, and before we started recording, was explaining to me all of the food that he ate in Las Vegas, going to Momofuku and Hattie B's and places like that in the Cosmo. Oh boy, what jealousy. An incredible amount of jealousy on my part.
Someday we'll be together again, my friend.
Oh, yes. Okay, let's start and talk about the Southeast Division like we did with the previous podcasts. We're going to go through these divisions alphabetically, which means we start with the Eastern Conference finalist, Atlanta Hawks. The Atlanta Hawks this offseason signed Trae Young to a five-year, $172 million extension that does have max language in it. Correct, Danny?
It does.
So it could go up to about 207, I believe, is the number?
Mm-hmm.
They signed John Collins to a five-year, $125 million contract. They drafted Jalen Johnson and Sharif Cooper. They re-signed Lou Williams to a one-year, $5 million deal. They re-signed Solomon Hill to a minimum deal. They traded Chris Dunn and Bruno Fernando for DeLon Wright. And then they signed Gorgui Dieng to a one-year, $4 million contract. I believe that that is everything, correct, Danny?
It is. The only thing I'll note is that both Collins and Trae Young have player options on their last year, which is very good work for them. That means that they get the choice of being a free agent in their last year or, you know, picking that up. And I expect both of them to decline it as of now, but we'll have to see. What I think is the most salient point for Atlanta is likely probably inspired by their success in the regular season and in the playoffs, despite plenty of injuries, is that they largely stayed the course. And that was what we expected after the offseason that Travis Schlenk had in 2020, when they added Gallinari and Bogdan Bogdanovich and had draft picks and drafted Okongwu and everything else. And so it's sort of uninspiring in the sense that it's exactly what we expected. And honestly, the terms on the big deals are pretty much right in the range that we expected, exactly with Trae Young. Of course. And so I think that doing what you expect is not necessarily bad. And I would say for the Hawks, it is not. But it does give us less to discuss.
The big move here to me is that they're bringing in DeLon Wright to kind of manage that backup point guard spot. They used Bogdan Bogdanovich to run the offense a decent amount last year. They used Kevin Huerter a little bit to run the offense. Obviously, once they acquired Lou Williams late in the season, Lou Williams took over the backup point guard role. I think DeLon is just a better player than Lou Williams at this stage of Lou's career. Lou is older, obviously, had an incredible career, and I think he makes sense to have around as an offensive just centerpiece. But the thing with DeLon Wright is pretty good at everything, not great at anything. And I think those guys tend to profile pretty well when it comes to playing in the playoffs.
They can. And the other luxury that Nate McMillan and Travis Schlenk have is that if they don't need DeLon Wright, they won't play DeLon Wright. Like, he doesn't have so much equity within the organization. And there is a part of me every once in a while, I mean, whenever a team doesn't like really use their resources fully, that goes, oh man, they might regret that. You know, like the Hawks basically what they did with their mid-level exception was they signed Gorgui Jang for part of it, and then they didn't use the rest of it, at least as of now, but I wouldn't expect them to. They did sign Lou Williams and everything else. It's just like, you go, well, okay, well, oh, yeah, they could have gotten this, they could have gotten that. But the Hawks run, I mean, depending on how you want to count numbers, 11 deep. And so, yes, maybe you could have gotten a slightly better player, and I think the theory behind Gorgui Jang was that Okongwu is going to miss some time with, I believe it's a torn labrum. And so the biggest need that they had was a backup for Clint Capela, and Gorgui Jang is a totally capable backup in that vein. And so, like, there's a part of me that goes, anytime you have the chance to get better, you should probably attempt to do it. Especially the Hawks' books aren't that bad; I think they're pretty clean. I would describe them that way overall. But let's say instead they're spending $7 or $8 million on player X, and they're saying, okay, we like you, player X, but you're going to be our second or third string player at your position. Some guys would do that. Yeah, I mean, if I don't know if like Trevor Ariza would have rather done that for them than gotten the minimum for the Lakers. He could have chosen either. He's made plenty of money in his career. So I think that for Atlanta, it's a totally reasonable set of moves. And the thing that I like the most about it, though, you brought up DeLon Wright, and I think he's a good example of this, is giving themselves, like, I don't necessarily use poker terms well because I don't play it, but like giving themselves outs. So now in the guard rotation, they have, or let's say the like 1 through 3. You have Trey at the head, then you have Bogdanovich, you have Hunter and Reddish, depending on how you want to play them. You have Kevin Huerter, you have Lou Will, you have DeLon Wright, you have maybe Sharif Cooper if things work out really well. And so what that means is you can go in a lot of different directions. You can put different combinations together. You can see what works, see what doesn't work. And hopefully Nate McMillan uses the regular season in part as a laboratory to test out these different combinations and permutations to see what looks good together. And the playoffs and the regular season are not the same endeavor, as the Hawks know all too well. And so I think that having Lou Will, having DeLon Wright, having Sharif potentially in the rotation there, it only leads to good things unless these players are uncomfortable being smaller, having smaller roles than they have at other points in their career.
Well, and that's what makes this even more interesting. The one thing that I thought they could have done this offseason that they chose not to go down this road, and I think it's totally reasonable to not go down this road, was they could have made either a consolidation trade in terms of talent, as in consolidating guys like Cam Reddish, DeAndre Hunter, Bogdan Bogdanovic into a better player, into something of a star. I don't think that guy was really out there necessarily, so I don't blame them for not going down this road. Or they could have kicked the can down the road in terms of contract structure a little bit more. Could have moved Cam Reddish for something like a lottery pick in the 2022 or 2021 NBA drafts. And again, we don't know if that trade was out there necessarily, but that is an interesting concept for me, for them. Potentially trying to, because this roster has a chance to get very expensive very quickly. Having said that, though, because DeAndre Hunter has been really good now, and I think he was really good last season when he was healthy, for only like 25, 30 games, and because Cam Reddish only played 25, 30 games last season, you don't know for sure which one of those guys is the keeper yet, I think.
Right. Well, and that makes it harder. Thing. If they're both keepers and you think they're both going to be better than John Collins, then you just trade John Collins down the road.
Totally. Like, you're absolutely not going to do it
right now. And Collins reasonably paid. I think this is a totally fair contract for him. I'm not saying that he did badly or anybody did badly in the negotiations. I think they ended up at about the right space. And, you know, it's kind of the same story with Gallinari. Like, but Gallinari, he has a pretty light partial guarantee for 22-23. Maybe you just move on from him. And it's also going to be a couple more years until the Hawks are expensive. And by that point, I think they'll have a much clearer idea where Hunter and Reddish fit in, and then it just so happens that the timing on Capela and Okongwu should be pretty square as well. So I think Schlenk will have a lot of information at his disposal that he does not yet have, and that should be pretty good. I think that I'm not particularly concerned. Trae Young is the one kind of truly irreplaceable piece, and he's locked up now. So yep. great work by them there. And outside of that, I think one of the most interesting things that Schlenk got really right in 2020, and I think he did reasonably well here, is understanding that outside of your stars, you kind of want a diversified portfolio, that you want guys who do different things well, who do different things poorly, and then some of them are going to work and some of them won't. And part of the reason things didn't work for the Hawks last year was just so many guys got hurt. But having functional depth, having like Gallinari, so that when Bogdanovich went out, you had somebody who could take some of the offensive workload and who could shore up your second unit and all the other things that Gallo did last year. Like, that's a luxury. And I think they did that again kind of with Lou Will and with Wright.
Yeah, no, I think that they are better, like, to answer the question that we ask at the end of these sections. Like, they're a better team, and they will be better than they were last year.
You know the other reason they're better? Because now they have a full season of Williams instead of a half season of Williams and a half season of Rondo, who straight up sucked for them.
Right, and they're hopefully going to get a full season from DeAndre Hunter and hopefully get a full season from Cam Reddish. Even if those guys are what they were last season, it gives them more optionality within game. And I would venture that they probably win more than 41 games this year. Do I think they will make the Eastern Conference Finals next year? Frankly, I don't, if we're being honest. But that doesn't mean they won't be a better team. They will still be growing and building towards something substantial. I just don't know that they'll necessarily make the deep playoff run that they did this year.
Yeah, I think that's fair, and I was interested in Jalen Johnson. I thought that he looks more like a four to me, but that's good.
Yeah.
I think that wing-sized guys who can do that, we'll see if he can shoot a little bit, we'll see how he can defend, but like in some ways, like we talked about in the Southwest pod with Trey Murphy, one of the nice things for the Hawks with Jalen Johnson is if it works, great. That'd be more power to you. You got another guy to add in the rotation. And if it takes Jalen Johnson a little bit of time, that's fine too. You can play him in the G League. You can do all sorts of other things with him. And so I like that bet. And Sharif Cooper was a lot of fun. I had heard about his passing. He was impressive in person. I don't know if he's going to generate enough separation to make it work, but he's on a two-way. So if he doesn't, no harm, no foul.
Right. Yeah, no, I thought Jalen Johnson looked awesome at Summer League. I was not and have never really been a Jalen Johnson guy. This is the utterly perfect situation for him to succeed. Because where he's going to be good is playing a similar role to what John Collins does as the screening four man who rolls hard to the rim. He's going to be really good at playing the short role, like when teams blitz Trae Young, he's the screener, and then, you know, they short roll him into that 18-foot range, and then he can take advantage of four-on-threes with his passing ability and with his athleticism. He's the guy that particularly popped for me in terms of looking much more athletic within an NBA spacing concept.
And just a big picture thing, you and I have sometimes disagreed on these, like, if he figures it out, guys. Like, Jalen Johnson, I think, fits firmly in that based on what I've heard about his time at Duke. And for me, one of the reasons that I like betting on those guys is that beyond the financial motivations, there are situational things that are going to lead them to try to work it out in the pros. And not all of them do. I mean, Dennis Smith is he's had their myriad factors there, but Dennis Smith is an example of how it doesn't always. But I like taking some of those, especially when your team is good enough that if it ends up snake eyes, okay, that's fine.
Yep. No, I agree with you totally. Jalen Johnson is a guy that I'm thinking about doing a story, it might be out by the time this comes out, where I re-rank kind of based off of where guys got picked, like how I would rank the draft class and based off of what we've seen at Summer League. He's a guy that would make a substantial leap up the board already. He looks much, much better than what I thought he would. Let's move on. Let's talk about the Charlotte Hornets. The Hornets traded the number 57 overall pick for Mason Plumlee and the number 37 overall pick. They drafted James Bouknight, Kai Jones, and JT Thor in the draft. They traded Devontae Graham for Wes Iwundu and a first-round pick in that sign-and-trade deal with New Orleans that you and I talked about on a previous episode. They signed Kelly Oubre to a two-year $26 million deal. They signed Ish Smith to a two-year $9 million deal. They lost Cody Zeller, Bismack Biyombo, Brad Wanamaker, Malik Monk, and Caleb Martin. I believe that's everything, right?
Yeah, it's everything I have.
Interesting offseason for the Charlotte Hornets. I think that they substantially improved their depth and also continued to grow in terms of building a roster that fits very well around LaMelo Ball as the centerpiece.
I mostly, but definitely not entirely, agree. And the biggest thing, and it drove me completely crazy with the Hornets offseason, is this was not the greatest center class it was not. That's the way it works out. Centers are not easy to come by. Jared Allen got paid a ton of money by the Cavs and everything else. There were better options than Mason Plumlee. And Mason Plumlee, you know, 1 year and then has a partial guarantee for the second. Like, for example, Rashawn Holmes. Like, Rashawn Holmes, I think, would have been a wonderful fit with this team. He could have run the floor. He's not the greatest defender, but he is a capable defender. And James Borrego has done a lot of different kind of ideas defensively. And the biggest part of it is what drove me truly crazy about Charlotte's offseason is, yeah, they ended up with Kelly Oubre, and I like Kelly Oubre fine with this team. But they didn't choose to apportion their money in really a different way, because Oubre signed so late, basically the offseason was over. And from a functional, like, basically they got the last guy when the music stopped. I mean, it could have been Schroeder, but, you know, either way. And so I respect, you know, making a specific move, but if they could have, I mean, remember, they also, like, I mean, yeah, they picked up, they moved up in the draft, and they got, I think that was Kai Jones was with, or was that, was JT Thor. That was, JT Thor was with that pick. And
oh, with that pick, yeah. But they also moved up to get Kai Jones,
They did also move up to get Kai Jones. And so, like, it's weird because they, you know, they added guys that make sense with where this team is and where they're going. Like, I think Oubre is going to help them. I think that Plumlee will help them. I think that Ish Smith will help them. But you kind of, like, this is what makes the, I think I'll use the Hawks as a parallel here, which is you don't get your luxuries until you have your primary needs met. And I didn't think that the Hornets had those needs met in the present. Maybe somebody like Kai or JT Thor steps in the future. And so to me, you don't eat your dessert first because you might not get the main course.
Yeah, so look, I would rather have just signed Rashawn Holmes than traded for Mason Plumlee and JT Thor. Like, it would have been both. Like, you have to consider it a move for both. They essentially gave up a nothing pick for Mason Plumlee and JT Thor. I think Rashawn Holmes is just a better player than both of those guys. I would have rather just signed Rashawn Holmes to what will likely be, what would have had to have been, I guess I should say, probably something in the range of a $14 million deal to get him away from Sacramento, it seems like. The deal that Rashawn Holmes signed is not what was reported. It was reported at like $456 million.
It could not have been because we knew exactly what Sacramento had to offer, and it was not that. And so, the actual, you know, like, there's a trade bonus, and if you want to get it, but if you want to get into that accounting, of course, Charlotte could have given him one of those too. But
yeah, Holmes, it's like a $446 million, isn't it?
It's $446 million final year player option. So yes, Charlotte could have absolutely beaten that. They could have beaten that without breaking a sweat if they had wanted to, and they didn't. Okay. But I think you want to have a reason for it. And the other, the weird thing, and this happens, like, sometimes, like for Kelly Oubre.
Just real quick, like, if you're Charlotte, you offer Rashawn Holmes $460 million with a team option pretty easily, right?
Yeah. And then by swapping the player option for a team option, because you paid him a bunch more money, you get more flexibility. And for the Hornets, you're not sacrificing much. You know, like, they had the space to work with. And so for the player, you're getting a lot more money over the terms of it. And if they, you know, pick up that team option, okay, you're getting a lot of money then. And if
if you're Rashawn Holmes, you're at 4 years, $47 million guaranteed now. You know, if you're taking the Charlotte offer, it's basically 3 years, $45 million. So you're not even losing that much guaranteed money if you're worried about, like, you know, getting the biggest amount of money.
And if you're worried about losing the control, I mean, you could have done a 3 year deal. And then if you do a 3 year deal, then he has full bird rights at the end of it. You could negotiate an extension. There are all sorts of other things that you could do. And so, for Charlotte, that the road not traveled, I think, for them would have made them a materially better team. And Charlotte, in the same vein we've talked about a couple times in the way we came up in the Southwest pod, is they don't have a ton of spending power / flexibility moving forward. Like, they could clear cap space in 22. It's possible that they could do so, but that's likely coming at the expense of, like, losing Terry Rozier or something else happening. Like, I think they're going to keep Miles Bridges. I think they'd rather kind of keep this team together. And so what that means is they didn't kick the can down the road. This is the can. Like, this is what they chose, and that's not exactly that inspiring. And I hope that Kai Jones or Vernon Carrier, Nick Richards, or JT Thor, like one of these guys can really step in and solve that, or they can get a good center for the mid-level exception next year. Like there are ways that they can solve this, but this was their best chance. And they eventually got Kelly Oubre. I think Kelly Oubre is a good basketball player, but he also is more of like a hole filler for this team rather than a central figure. And that's good. But like, okay, he's not going to, I don't think he moves in over any of the starters. He's just more basically like he can plug in case any of them is out, hurt, or, you know, injured, or whatever it is, what foul trouble, whatever the case may be. And then you have a partial guarantee in him for next year and you make that decision at that time.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think I kind of disagree with you on that, just if only because I think that this team is still very early in its development phase being built around LaMelo Ball. And yeah, you're right that they don't have a ton of flexibility over the next few years. I also don't know. Like, I think that they're basically trying to find guys who do work with LaMelo and trying to find guys that, like, play the style of play that Borrego wants to play. And because they have such a long chain to go down with LaMelo, they have him essentially for 8 more years if they want him, 7 more years, let's say. I kind of think that they're playing this right by just going and getting a lot of guys, going and getting like legit assets, like for the Devontae Graham move. Like Devontae Graham is probably not going to be a legitimate starter on the team that with LaMelo Ball is really good. So you move him for a first round pick. But James Bouknight and Kai Jones might. And well, Miles Bridges and PJ Washington might.
The resource they got for Devontae is, it's not a fake first, but it's a very unusual one in that if New Orleans misses the playoffs, then Charlotte gets 2 seconds. And if New Orleans makes the playoffs, they get the pick.
Yeah. So, yeah, like New Orleans might make playoffs this year. Like, genuinely, that's a real possibility. But you take a flyer on Kelly Oubre. You see if Kelly Oubre works next to LaMelo and works next to Gordon Hayward, right? If he doesn't work, you can move on, I believe, after this year, because I think that second year is a team option, right?
It's a partial guarantee.
Partial guarantee. So I like what they're doing, going and just trying a lot of different athletic players that can get out and run with LaMelo and seeing what sticks. While also, I think having enough flexibility long term to be able to like kind of move around and finagle if they need to, right? Because not like any of these guys are under contract for like 4 more years, basically.
Yeah, that's a fair point. And something that will eventually resolve. Mitch Kupchak has a lot of roster spots tied up in, I would say, lower ceiling 4s and 5s. Like, oh, I'm not the biggest fan of
like having Vernon Carey and Nick Richards and all of these dudes under contract. Like, I don't know what they're doing there, to be honest.
Yeah, and so some of them will work out, but yeah, and I generally support teams keeping, you know, like one of the ways to do this, and I think Memphis might end up doing this, is like start the training camp with more than 15 guaranteed guys and somebody's not going to pop and you just trade them or cut them. But you have to actually do that. And you can't, and they're, you know, they're a little bit shallow on wings if guys get hurt. And it's also like, I'm fine holding roster spots for talented players, even if they're at positions of lower value. But I don't personally see Carey and Richards as like top 15 starter upside. And so then, you know, if you need to hold a roster spot for young Jermaine O'Neal for 3 years, by all means. But I don't see either of them as that type of guy.
Yeah, I just don't even, I'm just like not even interested really in Vernon Carey and Nick Richards. So like I would cut them. Like, I mean, or I would like try and move them for whatever protected picks I can. I think that they obviously probably think pretty similarly given the fact that they just drafted Kai Jones, but like you can't have this many young centers on your roster. It just doesn't really make that much sense.
Yeah, even if some of them can play the four, but I mean, remember, they also have, like, we didn't even mention PJ Washington. Miles Bridges, I think, is better as a three than as a four, but he could end up going that direction. Like, they have a lot of guys in that conversation now. And yeah. Jalen McDaniels, who I like a lot.
Yeah, they just have a lot of lower rung guys on this roster, and that'll get figured out. Like, they'll figure out who they want to keep, who they want to move on from, and make moves based off of that. It's going to be easy to move off of a lot of those minimum contract guys. We'll see where it goes. I would say Charlotte is better than they were last year, but and I like the position they're in going forward. I don't think they're like substantially better or anything by any stretch.
Agreed. I wish they added something that gave them a different defensive wrinkle. But yeah, and we'll see what happens with Book Knight. He is the big moving piece moving forward. I'm interested.
I will say, I think Kai Jones is like a big swing piece in this draft. Like he is a potential home run. He also might be out of the league in like 4 years, but if it works, he's going to be really good, I think. Let's take a quick commercial break and we will be right back with the team that had the one of the bigger off seasons this year in Miami. Let's talk about a different kind of performance than what we're talking about with the NCAA tournament. They want to help your performance in the bedroom. Joy Mode, you know, just like on the basketball court, sometimes you might have an off night. Maybe you're playing okay and you want to take your game up a level even. That's where Joy Mode is going to come in. Don't grab some over-the-counter pills that you see at a gas station. They're going to often contain unregulated chemicals, suggest unsafe doses, carry the risk of several other health problems down the road. That's why we've partnered with Joy Mode. Whether you're looking to spice up your intimate moments or increase your confidence in the bedroom, Joy Mode makes all natural and science-backed supplements dedicated to helping men perform better across their core functions. Their trademark product, the Sexual Performance Booster, is every man's solution for increased performance. It's like a pre-workout, but for sex. And get this, all ingredients have been assessed in peer-reviewed journals and researched in humans. Imagine this, it comes in a palm-sized packet, like your favorite electrolyte powder. Just simply mix it with 6 to 8 ounces of water 45 minutes before sexual activity begins, and you're going to watch the magic unfold. Redefine your intimacy and go to use joymode.com for 20% off with code GAMETHEORY. That's GAMETHEORY. That's 20% off and free shipping with code GAMETHEORY. Not only is this the only supplement you'll need in the bedroom, but it also supports blood vessel support, cardiovascular and heart health, athletic performance, blood pressure, and general erection function. So why settle for anything less? Whether you're happy or unhappy with your performance in the bedroom, why not perform even better with Joy Mode? Okay, and we're back. Let's talk about the Miami Heat this offseason. They signed Kyle Lowry to a 3-year $85 million contract. They traded Goran Dragic and Precious Achiuwa in a deal to Toronto in that sign and trade. They extended Jimmy Butler. I believe that the way that extension worked is Jimmy opted into the player option and then added 3 years as opposed to declining and then adding four, right?
I believe that is what happened, yes.
They signed Victor Oladipo to a minimum deal. They signed PJ Tucker to a 2-year $14 million deal. They re-signed Duncan Robinson to a 5-year $90 million contract. They signed Markieff Morris, Dwayne Dedman, Gabe Vincent, Max Strus, Omer Yurtseven to essentially 1-year guarantee deals. They re-signed Udonis Haslam. They lose Kendrick Nunn, Trevor Ariza, Andre Iguodala, Nemanja Bjelica, as well as the aforementioned Goran Dragic and Precious Achiuwa. A totally different roster this year in Miami. I think that they're better for it. I don't know how much better they are long-term for it, but this front office just tends to figure some things out. So where are we at on what the Miami Heat did this offseason?
They're going to be good. I mean, they're going to be one of the better teams in the Eastern Conference, but if this comes down to a question, I would say, of how do you, this is one of my favorite terms, but it's like, how do you define success? So
yeah,
I would not expect, knowing what we know right now, I would not expect the Miami Heat to make an NBA Finals over the 3 years of Kyle Lowry's contract. They can, and we've had many recent examples, including the Phoenix Suns last year and arguably the Bucks last year, where we're the best team, the most talented team in a conference, did not end up winning it. And so I think Miami got themselves in the arena with this. So one idea is if you're good with that, if you're good with the idea that you can be in the mix, but probably not favored to win, more power to you. But the counter to that, and I think this is where Pat Riley would go, I think this is where Mickey Arison would go, is what was their real alternative? Because they have Jimmy Butler, they have Bam Adebayo, Duncan Robinson. So if they're kind of too good to keep the powder dry, they wouldn't have gotten any other premium assets. They weren't going to really have cap space moving forward. So they gave up Goran Dragic, expiring contract, and they gave up Precious to get Kyle Lowry, who is a better player and who Jimmy Butler seems happy to have. So I think it's kind of more, it's not even about like, did they get better or even like, how good are they now? We can definitely and should have that conversation, but it's more, are you okay with where they are?
I am okay with where they are, and I think that you are as well, based off of what you're saying here.
Yeah, I mean, I would say they're probably the second through fifth best team in the Eastern Conference, depending on how this shakes out.
Yeah, like, I would definitely take Brooklyn ahead of them. I would, for the regular season, definitely take Milwaukee ahead of them.
Agreed.
I mean, Philly, it just depends on what shakes out with the Ben Simmons thing. Like, we just don't know. And then Atlanta is also firmly in the mix here as well. So, yeah, I would
and
say...
And to me, so is Boston. Like,
yeah, so they hit third through sixth, yeah.
No, and I would say second through sixth, because, you, like...
You would even throw them in with Milwaukee.
There's a, I mean, it's, I would say I would expect Milwaukee, but it is plausible, especially if Milwaukee, you think about the wear and tear that's on their guys, you know, like, so, something listeners should remember is that we talked a lot last year about how short the offseason was. This offseason is the same length as last offseason, from finals to start of season. And not only did the Bucks make it all the way through, working their guys in insane degree, but a few of their guys, because they wanted to, and more power to them. I mean, incredible for Drew and for Chris Middleton. They then played in the Olympics on top of that and worked, you know, flew back and forth to Japan. They did all the extra time. So I think that the Bucks on paper are better, but I wouldn't guarantee that that translates in full because of these external factors.
Yeah, I generally agree with that, and I'll talk about the Central Division at some point with a guest that I think people on the podcast will be familiar with. But yeah, this Miami team is in an interesting space now, to where if Jimmy Butler continues to play well, if Bam Adebayo continues to play well, if Duncan Robinson continues to play well, and then Kyle Lowry obviously adds what we think Lowry can add, feels like this team is well positioned to be a good regular season team. For me, what is most intriguing about this is I really like the way that they look in the playoffs as well. Jimmy Butler can go get his own shot. Kyle Lowry can go get his own shot. Bam can't really get his own shot, but is effective enough within sets to where it's interesting. And then all of their starters now, let's throw Duncan Robinson in, and I would look, I think Tyler Hero probably plays more minutes than PJ Tucker, don't you?
Not more high leverage minutes, but low leverage minutes? Yeah, probably.
Look, Tyler Hero was not very good this last year, but he still averaged like 15 points on, like, what was it, like 44-36-90 or 44-36-80, it looks like here looking at it. I think we kind of expected too much of Tyler Hero, and if we look at it in the context,
here's the other thing. If we're talking about playoff minutes, I don't think they want to play Robinson and Hero together. I think they'll want to play one of the two of them. So
that might be a better point.
Yeah.
But like in the context of like second year, Tyler Hero averaging 15 points per game on 44-36-80 shooting and having a 2-to-1 assist turnover ratio, like that's a pretty good year for a 21-year-old player in the NBA.
In certain ways, I think that the, you know, some of the drop-offs that happened from the bubble, which at this point we could say was the kind of, not the best case scenario, but like the high watermark for him to this point.
Yeah.
But so with, and there are the murmurs about his attitude and all the other stuff. So like, I think the spot is there for Hero if he takes it, but if he doesn't take it, then they'll find somebody who will.
Yeah, I think that that's totally reasonable and right. But I think that like I'm still relatively in on Tyler Hero, I guess is what I would say, compared to where everyone seems to be out on him at this point.
I would say my stance on him has moved less dramatically in both directions. Like I was more ambivalent about his rise, and then I was less reactionary to his fall.
And what do we do with Victor Oladipo, by the way?
Oh, I think you treat this as a gap year.
You just like don't even think he can like do anything this year.
Well, we'll see. I mean, if he can, then great, but I don't think you need him. You're not relying on him. And the other nice thing about the timeline is that if he's ready, it's most likely to be around the playoffs, and great, more power to you if you can get him.
Yeah, that's a very fair point. If the Oladipo thing works, he does kind of change their calculus a little bit, because by re-signing with Miami, he restarted his bird rights, or he keeps his bird rights. Which actually gives them like a really interesting piece if he's good.
It does. I mean, it would be very expensive for ownership, but they could consider it. And then the other possibility for Miami is that it would have to be a team that doesn't have cap space, but maybe they could do a sign and trade and get something, not something premium in return, but something modest.
Yeah, something weird with Oladipo. That's kind of getting into the weeds, though. I like the way that this team profiles in the playoffs, though, because I think that they can simultaneously create offense off the ball and on the ball with Jimmy Butler, Bam Adebayo, and PJ Tucker. They have, I think, one of the better units to be able to defend teams like Milwaukee and Brooklyn that have a lot of high leverage self-creating players. I just kind of like the way this roster mixes together at the end of the day.
I still worry about their offense, and I worry about how they don't have a lot of outs. You know, the Hero is probably the one. And so if PJ Tucker takes a step back, if Jimmy's not the same guy defensively, like that, I think they, you know, Lowry could potentially have another, could have another drop. I mean, he's, you know, point guard in his early mid 30s, like that can happen. And so I wish they had somebody else for me to be like, oh, if that guy takes a step forward, they're going to be really good. And yeah. I know you like Max Strus and some of the other guys, but they're not quite there. And Markieff Morris, like, isn't that guy at this stage in his career. So
Max Strus is that guy. He's maybe that
it's
guy.
Maybe it's Max. Maybe it's a buyout player. I think Miami could be interesting in that respect. But, you know, like, I think I'm a little bit more worried about their offense. I think it's going to, you know, they have players, like, there is a theory of the case, but I don't know, you know, against the teams that really slow things down. Or here's the other way of putting it. Let's say they run up against the Brooklyn Nets. And this is part of why, I mean, maybe the Nets are just so anomalous that we shouldn't talk about them for this. It's like, okay, if Miami can't slow them down enough for them to outscore outscore them, you know, like that's sort of a problem. Like the Nets are, but maybe that's why the Nets should be the heavy favorites to win the Eastern Conference.
I just kind of think it's going to be hard for anyone to outscore Brooklyn,
For example, like if Miami faces Philly in a series, knowing what we know right now, and that would change. I think there's a meaningful chance I pick Miami in that series. I think there's, you know, I would, knowing what we know right now, I'd pick them against the Hawks. I'd pick them, and a Bucks series, you know, like the Bucks waxed them last year. But these will be different rosters for both teams, including one player changing from one team to the other. And I think that I don't need to pick it, but so like Miami's in a good place. And the other part of this is it doesn't happen every year, but it's fairly frequent that one of the top teams in your conference will fall off due to injury or something else. And then if all you need is one team to do it, you can.
Yeah, I mean, that team was Miami last year, frankly. This year, they went from making the finals to being, what, the sixth seed, if I remember correctly?
Yeah, or, I mean, what I mean by that is, like, Brooklyn, two of their three best players got hurt. All of a sudden, they're not the same threat they were. Like, yeah. That's it might not necessarily be the Nets, but unfortunately, playoffs are always a battle of attrition.
Yeah, and, no, they really are.
So that's why being in the mix is useful.
Okay. Miami, just tangibly much better than they were last year. Yeah, there's just not really another argument against it. Let's move on. Let's go to the fourth team in this division, which will take the shortest amount of time, the Orlando Magic. They drafted Jalen Suggs and Franz Wagner. They signed Mo Wagner, signed Robin Lopez. They waived Dwayne Bacon. They lost Otto Porter. I believe that's basically it for them, right?
Yep. We'll see what they do in terms of extensions with Mo Bamba and Wendell Carter. But yeah, I mean, I think they were extremely fortunate that Jalen Suggs fell to them at five. He looked very good in summer league, and I've been lower on Franz Wagner. I continue to be lower on Franz Wagner, but we'll have to see. Even if I thought that a prospect was the best player I'd ever seen or the worst player I'd ever seen in summer league, I would still want a lot more information before made any sort of definitive thing. And so Orlando, like this comes up a couple of times in every offseason where a bad team benefits from not having flexibility. And I think that was actually a really good thing for Orlando because they couldn't really go in any other direction after they, you know, they got Gary Harris in the Aaron Gordon deal. They signed Isaac and Fultz to those extensions. So they basically have their team, and that meant that they, you know, they could have used the full mid-level if they wanted to. They still have this big old trade exception if they want to use it, which I think they might just do that potentially later in the season to get an asset if the right player is available. So to me, the most interesting part of it, I mean, we'll talk about Suggs and Wagner, of course, but like, if the goal for Jeff Weltman in the front office was to maximize the 21-22 talent, they probably would have used the mid-level exception in a different way than Robin Lopez, considering they already have two centers they want to play. But having Lopez mentor those guys, having another capable player who's both good enough to help you but not good enough to set you on a different trajectory, okay.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just like not going to be upset about signing Robin Lopez. Like, it's fine. It's a one-year deal for $5 million. It'd be like missing the forest for
trees. It's a one-year deal that you could potentially, like, it wouldn't stun me to see Lopez and, let's say, Ross or Harris in a deal at or around the deadline, bringing back somebody who's on, like, a worse contract plus an asset, and that the other team is excited about getting Robin Lopez for a $5 million contract.
Right, and getting Terrence Ross as a scorer off the bench. I'm trying to think off the top of my head, like, what team that would be that would do that, that could actually try to move or would want to move some money. I mean, I'm not going to like belabor the point by really thinking about it long term. Like, is there a chance that, like, I mean, like, someone gets hurt for Utah or something, like injuries happen and they need Robin Lopez or something like
that? Or like, I'll give you one. The Indiana Pacers. Like, let's say the Pacers need a little depth. They have Jeremy Lamb, who's making $10 million. And so they could, you know, do something small like that. And they wouldn't probably need Robin Lopez, but who knows if their roster changes around a little bit. But, like, you never – the other part of this is you never know where things are going to shake out, but you know that someone's going to need a player of that ilk because somebody's going to get hurt.
Right. No, that's absolutely right. This was a successful offseason for the Orlando Magic because they got Jalen Suggs, who is the number two player on my board. And I think he's going to be an all-star level player who has an outside shot of being an all-NBA player. They got the centerpiece that they need to build around, just straight up. Like, that is the only thing that matters for them this offseason.
And beyond that, they got that centerpiece, and I don't think it sabotages their ability to get another. So
yep, totally.
I think the Magic are going to be one of the five worst teams in the league next year. That doesn't guarantee you're going to get that player in the 2022 draft. But that's the mistake. They avoided the mistake that a lot of teams do, which is, okay, you got one guy that you really like, and then, okay, Isaac and Fultz, who this front office just re-signed. You know, you get into all that kind of stuff. It's like, okay, you get maybe one or two more bites at that apple, and so then then by that point, if Suggs is awesome, great.
Yeah, no, they have not hampered their ability to evaluate the roster, other than maybe at the center position, depending on how much Robin Lopez plays. But if Mo Bamba can't beat out Robin Lopez at this point, that's a problem for Orlando, and that says something in and of itself, I think. Just in general, this team's fine. They're rolling right along. They are going to be bad this year. They now have a direction, though, because they have Jalen Suggs. I'm a little bit lower on Franz Wagner, much as you are, but I still think he's fine, and I still think he'll be a valuable rotation player for Orlando going forward. We'll see where it goes, right? So Orlando, look, doesn't matter if they got better or worse this summer, but they now have a clear direction, and they are building around Jalen Suggs, and honestly, probably will be more exciting to watch at the very least. Maybe that's the way to put it, right?
Yeah, and I think that there are big benefits to owning where you are. And I think that Orlando is going to reap those benefits over the course of the next year, but more accurately, over the course of the next four.
Okay, final team for us to talk about, the Washington Wizards, which had a substantial move this offseason, and we'll talk about them right after this commercial break. Okay, the Washington Wizards, they moved Russell Westbrook this summer in what was the most convoluted trade in the last decade in the NBA. Danny, you are the purveyor of convoluted trades. Please correct me if I'm wrong.
It's in the mix at bare minimum. I mean, it was a pretty ridiculous one.
It's a five-team deal, and we're only going to talk about what happened with Washington within that deal. They moved Russell Westbrook to the Los Angeles Lakers. They acquired Kyle Kuzma, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Montrezl Harrell, and the 22nd pick in the 2021 NBA draft. They moved that 22nd pick for Aaron Holiday and the number 31 pick in the draft. They drafted Corey Kispert at 15 and Isaiah Todd at 31. Then they signed Spencer Dinwiddie and included that deal within the sign and trade for Westbrook and moved Chandler Hutchison to San Antonio. San Antonio then moved, I believe, Milutinov's rights to Brooklyn. All sorts convoluted. What matters here is essentially it was Russell Westbrook for Kyle Kuzma, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Montrezl Harrell, Aaron Holiday, Isaiah Todd.
And 31, yeah.
Spencer Dinwiddie, period, I guess. What a set of moves. They also re-signed Howell Neto as well. I believe that that's everything they did this summer, right?
Yeah, and I think this was a really successful offseason for Tommy Shepard and the Wizards, and I didn't necessarily see that coming. And part of it is they were able to convert a single player in Russell Westbrook into both a lot of different players and flexibility. Because while Dinwiddie, he has two fully guaranteed years at a totally reasonable price and then a partial guarantee, which can become fully guaranteed if he plays enough games. KCP has a light partial guarantee for the 22-23. Montrezl Harrell has no guaranteed money. Kuzma's only making 13 mil. So they were basically able to reshuffle Russell Westbrook into potentially four players that can help them. And those four players can be either a part of the Wizards moving forward, or they can be a part of different teams through trades and through everything else. And so I really didn't like what the Wizards did, partially because of Westbrook, but a lot of it was also just like they gave this bad contract to Davis Bertans. And my criticism of what Shepard did in 2020 was that they needed everything to go well to be even decent. And they were on the fringes of decent. You know, they did technically make the playoffs, but they were, you know, that we know how that went. And now I'm not saying it's definitely going to work, but they have more guys that can play. They have more depth in rotation. And also if Beal wants to go elsewhere, if they end up, you know, wanting to move in a different way, or even just some of these players work out and some of them don't, then they're not tethered to two more years of Russell Westbrook.
Yeah, I generally agree with all of that. This was a great offseason in terms of flexibility and the ability to make different moves and decisions going forward. And this offseason gives them flexibility dependent upon, like, regardless of whether or not Bradley Beal wants to be there or not. I think that that's the ultimate key here. We still don't know what Bradley Beal's ultimate decision is going to be in terms of long-term staying in Washington. It feels like he's going to stay in Washington at the very least for this offseason. Maybe in October, when he's able to sign an extension, he signs like a three-year extension and they can build around Bradley Beal with what they have on the roster going forward. We shall see. But this move with Russell Westbrook, given the players that they acquired, it gives them the ability to aggregate those players at some point into a trade and go get another guy who can be a star next to Bradley Beal and Spencer Dinwiddie, or it allows them to just move those guys maybe for future value if Bradley Beal moves on, because I think that there are certainly teams that would love to have Kentavious Caldwell-Pope and Kyle Kuzma to an extent, for sure. Look, I didn't like the Isaiah Todd pick at 31. I thought it was kind of a ridiculous pick, if we're being honest. But I would have just rather taken like Miles McBride at 22 than taken on Aaron Holiday and Isaiah Todd. But if we're being honest, you know, whatever, fine. Like, go do your thing, Washington, and take your bet on Aaron Holiday being good for a year and take your bet on Isaiah Todd being good eventually, which I don't think he will be, but whatever.
Yeah, I don't have as many thoughts on their draft guys just yet. We'll have to. I kind of want to see where it goes for Kispert and for what the 22, 31, and all that. But it is another time that Tommy Shepard bet on a player who hadn't really succeeded other places, who I wouldn't say has like starter upside. You know, they did that with Troy Brown and Chandler Hutchison and
Jerome Robinson.
It's a worthwhile approach. However, I think you need to do it for the right players. And I think he's second drafting wrong, but hopefully he's right with Aaron Holiday. I mean, I want it to work out. And Holiday, you know, he is an option for backup point guard. I'm really happy they re-signed Neto, because now if Holiday doesn't work out, they have something built in. And also, I'm really happy that players like Kuzma, was in such a weird situation when on the Lakers, where like his role changed a lot. They brought in LeBron, brought in AD, and now I think he's going to have a more sustainable ecosystem for him, and he can maybe find his offensive game back. And I don't think it's funny, because I've never been the biggest Kuzma believer, and that's still true, but I think he's better than what he has been. And he was a useful role player on the Lakers title team in 2020. But now we'll get a clearer sense of what he is. And $13 million for two more years and then a player option. That was the extension that he signed originally with the Lakers. That's totally fine. Like, that's, you know, you're not, I mean, even if he ends up not being the player that everybody hopes that he is, he's still, you know, a forward-sized player making backup money.
Well, and the thing with Kuzma, too, is that I actually have, like, my opinion of him has grown, in my estimation at least, over the course of the last couple of years as he's dealt with all of this different role allocation. He's gotten much better defensively. Like, he is actually a pretty switchable defender now. Like, he's not necessarily a plus defender that you build around, like, scheme-wise on that end, but he is versatile and does some different things. He's pretty good on offense, and I will be interested to see what he looks like. I would try to run him with second units. The problem is that I think there's also a couple of guys on this roster that I would want to run the offense through second units with Rui and with Denny Avdija right now, at least. Look, this roster is kind of a mess in the front court still. Like, they just have a lot of bodies. They also have quite a few wings that I will be interested to see how they use. Like, the starting lineup for this team next year is probably something like Spencer Dinwiddie, Bradley Beal, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. I would venture they're going to start Rui, even though I would not. Like, I would think that that's probably the route that they go. And then at the center position, you might go Gafford then. And then, like, bring Denny and Kuzma off the bench and have them run that unit. Hopefully Thomas Bryant gets back healthy.
Remember, it's a weird front court
roster. And they have Montrezl Harrell. It's a weird front court. And I think there probably is another shoe to drop even this offseason, potentially, in terms of maneuvering around those guys and making them fit better. But it's a roster that makes more sense for where they're going than what it was when Russell Westbrook was taking up every single possession.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, the Washington Wizards. Do we think this team will be better this season than they were last season? Is actually a real question, I think.
I do. I think Spencer Dinwiddie is going to be better for them than Russell Westbrook was.
Interesting. Okay, tell me why.
I think that he is a more nuanced offensive player. I think that he can fit well with Beal, and can actually, he's not the greatest floor spacer, but he can do that. And it's interesting, Dinwiddie has these splits the last couple of years. I looked into this going into the offseason. He's a much better catch and shoot 3-point shooter than he is a pull up guy. And that makes sense when you think about kind of where his game is. And so that makes him a nice fit along with Beal. What the big challenge for me with the Wiz is not actually from that front. It's that, how are they going to square this defensively? Because they were way better than we expected defensively last year after being abysmal 2 years ago. And they just lost one of their best defenders in Robin Lopez. They're probably going back to Thomas Bryant. And they added some more capable defenders in the rotation, but I'm not actually sure they're going to play those gentlemen. So it might not be as, you know, like KCP, if he's playing the three, then that's a challenging spot for him. You know, a lot of those type of things. Yeah. So I think Dinwiddie, Westbrook he's not going to have better counting stats. Like that Russell Westbrook is.
Yeah, like Russell Westbrook in the last half of the season last year, from like mid March onward, averaged 23-13-13.
Sure,
that's like ridiculous.
But Russell Westbrook for the full season
was not
2400
awesome.
2400 minutes. Yeah. 51% true shooting, 30% usage. And it's not like the Wizards offense was super good when Westbrook was on and Beal was off. Like that's been one of my calibrators for players. This is part of the reason I ripped Dennis Schroeder for a lot over the years. And I mean, he got a cheap contract and all that, is that it's easy to look good in certain respects as the second best offensive player with the skill set that a lot of these guys have. But when you're the, but if you can't hack it as the number one guy, then you're just not super useful. And okay, so here's the stat on it. Last year when Russell Westbrook was on the floor and Bradley Beal was not, and yes, a lot of these lineups were massively screwed up from a spacing standpoint. It was like Russ and Ish Smith or somebody else. And they had a 105 offensive rating. That's terrible. That's Westbrook on, Beal off. And so like, I think Dinwiddie can be better than that. I think that he was better, like, as the individual creator for the Nets 2 years ago than Westbrook has been the last 3 years.
Yeah, I think that everyone kind of equates the way that Russ and Bradley Beal played together with that final stretch of games where they went 17-6 in their final 23 games, and Russell Westbrook averaged 23-14-14 over that time. And Bradley Beal played, I want to say, like 19 of those 23 or whatever games, and averaged 31-4-4 and was unbelievable. But you take away that stretch of the season, I mean, this team was 14-35 or something at one point. Like they were abysmally bad at one point in the year.
Even if Westbrook was hurt for a portion of that time, which it seems like is kind of the loose consensus.
Yeah.
He was still terrible. And like if we're you're not just replacing the best Russell Westbrook for 25 games, you're replacing the entirety of Russell Westbrook.
Yeah. No, I think that that's right. I would venture that they are probably slightly better than, or I would say they probably go something similar to around 500, which is what they were last year. They were 34-38 last year. I would guess that they go something like 36-36 again. The problem for them is that the East is better now. Philadelphia, look, we have them ahead of Washington in the hierarchy, regardless of what happens with Ben Simmons. We'll see what happens with Ben Simmons, though. Definitely Brooklyn ahead of them. I would still have the Knicks ahead of them in the hierarchy. I still think that they're just a little bit better of a team.
Oh, I agree. Especially with Kemba now. Like, if they hadn't gotten Kemba, it would have been different. But no, I have the Knicks above them, too.
Yeah, I would certainly have the Celtics ahead. I would certainly have Milwaukee ahead. I think I would have Indiana ahead with a coach that makes people actually want to be in the building. I think I would have the Bulls ahead of Washington as well at this point. And then obviously Atlanta and Miami, that's 10 teams ahead of them. Like I would say that Washington, look, on paper, and basketball is not played on paper, it's played on the court, and this is not counting Toronto, who I think will be interesting on some level, and not counting Charlotte, who also will be interesting on some level. I think that even not counting those teams, they're probably on the outside looking in what is going to be a much better Eastern Conference.
Yeah, I would agree. And it's notable that all of these teams, like basically that it seems like the play-in is motivating teams that are more on the fringes to be more competitive, but also part of it is just where talent is, that it just so happens there are a number of good players that are on teams that probably aren't going to win a playoff series, and those, you know, like Chicago and Washington with LaVine and Beal respectively, those teams went more aggressively after being as good as they can be, even if they can't be truly great.
Yeah, so while on paper, I think I do agree with you, this team probably is slightly better. I mean, if we're thinking they're the 10th or 11th or 12th best team in the East, like that's probably not a 36-win team or a 35-win team even. So I don't know. Washington's in a weird place right now, but it's a much better transitional space than they were in when they had Russell Westbrook on the roster, I think.
Yep.
Danny, I'm glad that you get some time off now. We're done recording these two podcasts. Is everything going okay? Let's tell the people what's going on in Danny LaRue's life now that basketball's over. Come on.
Oh, well, I don't talk a ton about my personal life, so I'm going to continue to not talk about it publicly here. But things are good. And so, I mean, well, the one I will tell is that I'm at some point in the future, depending on when this is released, I'll be hopefully having the second surgery on my collarbone. So, and hopefully that goes well.
That's
so,
very exciting.
So yeah, it. And then if you want to listen, if you want to check out my other work, Dunked On with Nate Duncan. We have both the free version and Dunked On Prime, which covers the rest of the week. You know, free is once a week. Dunked On Prime is everything else. And we also do Discord and chats and all that fun stuff. And then Real GM Radio is once a week. I do writing for The Athletic, including some stuff with you. And all of that will continue because, like you, I think most of the time, I genuinely enjoy working, and I think having a small amount of it is a good kind of like balance within my life. So I will take a break later on in the off season, but you should still be seeing stuff from me pretty frequently throughout this part of the off season.
No, yeah, that's definitely how I am too. I do like working. I love the job that I have. I think we're incredibly lucky to have the jobs that we have. I will say, I don't know if you feel this way or not, I right around the end of the draft cycle, I started to get burnout like that.
Oh, I had same 18, for me. I mean,
yeah, that 18 month push that we had, it kind of, especially for me, because I didn't get any off season last year because the finals ended, it was the draft. And then literally the next week, college basketball started again. So yep. I'm ready to take 2 weeks off. Let's put it that way. Danny, I'm glad that you came on. I'm glad that we got a chance to talk. I'm super glad that people are going to go listen to Real GM Radio. They're going to go listen to Dunked On. They're going to go read you at The Athletic. And this has been the Game Theory Podcast. Please remember, rate, review, subscribe, do everything you can to support the show. We will be back next week. Maybe, I don't know what order I'm going to release these in. I'm banking a few of them. We'll see what order they get done in. But until next time, we will talk soon. Bye.